Hello, everyone. I'm Sergeant Major of the Army, retired Ken Preston, and welcome to this edition of Soldier Today podcast. Today, we're here in our studio with Sergeant Major of the Army, Michael A. Grinston, our 16th Sergeant Major of the Army. Today, we thought it would be great to do a Meet Your New Sergeant Major of the Army podcast to allow those soldiers who do not know SMA Grinston to learn more about him and his and the Army's leadership focus on soldiers and non-commissioned officers for the future. SMA, welcome to this edition of Soldier Today podcast, and congratulations on your selection to serve as our new SMA.
Well, you know, Ken, thanks for having me here today. It's a big honor to be the 16th Sergeant Major of the Army. As I keep telling folks, sometimes I think I got to be pinched to go, man, yeah. Is that really me? But it's really a great honor. And I just say, you know, I've always thought as myself just to be a soldier. So I really enjoy it. And I'm really happy that I can continue to serve the great soldiers of America's Army.
Yeah, and I can say a lot of great things about you. And I thought that this podcast would be a really great opportunity for our listeners out there to really get to know a little bit about you, just hearing you talk and learn a little bit about your personality. So, you know, SMA, over the last 90 days since you and the Chief of Staff of the Army both assumed your current positions, you know, the Army has already accomplished some great things.
We sworn in the 24th Secretary of the Army. He got confirmed. I'm really proud of that. He's a great person, and he really listens to soldiers. I've had two breakfasts with him so far. He wants to bring people in and he listens. So I'm really happy with that. We've also, yesterday, I was really excited that we awarded the first expert soldier badge. I was really proud of that because 2 years ago, I told him as the Corps Sergeant Major, when we ran that pilot, I said, if you get this award, if you make it through the training and you meet the standard, I'm going to be there to award that badge, and it actually worked out. So I'm really proud of that.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, with those 11 non-commissioned officers there on stage, you know, with you and the chief, I thought what was really very cool was the diversity of where they came from, all the different locations.
Yeah, we picked a group across, but it was so long ago, it was kind of first Corps centric. We had a lot of other competitors. So only 11 met the standard. We had a mix from all groups. We picked all MOSs. We had females, males, and everybody went through. It was one standard. But now, it was a couple of years later, they'd PCS and they'd gone some other place. So as long as they met the standard, I'm really proud that they got an opportunity to award those badges.
Yep, good. So talk a bit about also, too, you had the Army Combat Fitness Test has now kind of been announced by the Army and it's out there. And I actually had a chance to watch you take the Army Combat Fitness Test.
Yeah, I just didn't know it was going to be that big of a hit when I posted my ACFT card on Twitter.
So yeah, I put it out there all over social media, too. I'm trying to help you out.
Yeah, it's everywhere. Thanks. I appreciate it. I can't go 5 feet, and people actually don't talk to me about it. So I'm actually pretty proud of that. But what people don't really see is how I started off. You know, if you go back about 18 months ago, I had never done any deadlifts. I didn't really do leg tucks. You know, I was still focusing on functional fitness. But that score would have been much different if you looked at what I'd done 18 months. It took a lot of time, a lot of buildup, especially as I got older. I was like, how is this going to work out? I actually thought, you know, I'm going to do these deadlifts. It's going to hurt my back. And I found out my back is a lot stronger. I've worked on the posterior, you know, the hamstrings. Yeah. And I'm a lot stronger. And as I get older, being stronger has helped less injuries. So it just takes a little time. It's something new. If you're afraid of it, don't be afraid. Just go do it and then train for it. And then I think we're going to be fine. If you don't do anything and expect to do what you did before to pass this one, it's not going to work out well.
Yeah. And I'm going to come back to the Army Combat Fitness Test here in a minute. But one of the things, too, in the last 90 days was the rollout for initial military training.
Yes. So now that's the only test that they're going to do. They're going to take the Army Combat Fitness Test and initial military training, and they're going to get to their units and go, there's no other test. So I think it's going to be really good for the Army. And pretty soon, it's going to be what we do. There's a lot of angst over it, but I think that'll go away after about a year or two.
Sure. That's right. So what about now the Best Warrior competition? I mean, we recognize now we have a new non-commissioned officer and Soldier of the Year.
Yeah, I'm really proud of that. The competition was really great. I'm trying to figure out how am I going to make that better next year. So we've got some really great ideas. A lot of people have heard me talk about this is my squad. And then how can we make the Best Warrior competition integrate And I got some great ideas. The Army Reserve talked about maybe we take a small team and we call that the squad. And from there comes the best NCO. And from there comes the best soldier of the year. So we're not done yet. We're going to, you know, all those SMAs before me have done great. And we're going to keep pushing this forward. But we're looking to make it even better next year.
Yeah. And, you know, and speaking of SMA, so we now have a fifth honorary Sergeant Major of the Army.
Oh, I still, you know, the first day I got in and, you know, Dan said, hey, good luck. You get to pick this new honorary SMA. And I thought about it for a minute. I saw it and I got a lot of mentorship from the former SMAs. But I still remember hearing the story from Rock Merritt. I mean, what a phenomenal, what a hero. World War II veteran, making in the jumps, you know, fought in the Battle of the Bulge, Market Garden. I mean, well, first of all, over 90, and the way he tells his story like it was yesterday is phenomenal. And the dedication he has had for 77 years to his military. And then the people he was talking about where he got direction from Omar Bradley, and then he starts talking about Patton. I mean, these are like heroes. These are like people in our history that we've never heard. You know, it's you got to meet those people. If you haven't heard that story, it's phenomenal. And he is a great American treasure. And we got a treasure in why he's still with us.
You know, I was sitting there talking with him, you know, in the office, you know, before we recognized him. And but we got talking about General of the Army Omar Bradley. And, you know, when he came to see him, this was just before he retired from the Army with 35 years. But and Omar Bradley at that time was 90 years old. But they had this discussion, and but I thought that was amazing because you're right. I mean, those kind of leaders are who we hear about in the movies or history books, and I thought it was a great choice. And I know speaking on behalf of all the other former sergeants major of the Army, it was a great choice and a great role model for, you know, all of our soldiers out there across the Army.
Yeah, and then just to hear him talk about what Omar Bradley told him. He said, I want you to think and focus on those squad leaders. And that still holds true, what he's been doing for over 40 years. So focusing in the squad leader, which is really what we really need to do
today. You mentioned in there, too, about he had just been up to Fort Drum, 10th Mountain Division, doing some mentoring. How cool is that?
Yeah, I know. That's what I thought.
And he was like 96 years old. So that's a great segue into, you know, so all of us who have served in leadership positions, from team leader to squad leader to platoon sergeant, all the way up to Sergeant Major of the Army, you know, we encourage leaders to take that piece of the Army that they're responsible for and make it better. So we expect all leaders to look for opportunities to improve. You know, this is what has made our Army the greatest Army in the world. So as you come on board, you, the Chief of Staff of the Army, the Secretary of the Army, have talked about the things you want to focus on. You know, one of those focus areas is, this is my squad. So what's this all about?
It's about taking all the great things that our squads do every day, and then how do we quantify that and make it better? So you're going to build a cohesive team. But what does that look like? What does that mean? And I don't want to focus in on the negative. I want to focus in on the positive. Because when you say, and think about the statement, this is my squad. It's when I say that possessive pronoun means I own this. This is my squad. Whether that's my squad leader, when I brought it up, one of the people in the room was the officer. He goes, that was my division commander, as opposed to the division commander.
Yes.
And when you can build on a positive aspects, and I think it equates to everything that we do, that statement. And let's talk about, we were in a meeting, we're talking about suicides.
Yes.
So let's think positive aspects. So the first thing on the line on the suicide was how many, you know, who had the most suicides? And then the second one was who had the second most suicides. And nowhere on the chart was who had the least, who had no suicides. Yeah. No suicides in the brigade. So this is my squad. I want to focus in on all the great things that great squads do. And let's get that to all the squads where every squad member and every squad leader says, this is my squad leader and this is my squads. And we're going to take that and say, what brigade didn't have any suicides? And we're going to list those ones at the top. And then the bottom of the list is going to be the units that had the most. Learn from those ones at the top. And then we get everybody up to that top so that we're all saying, this is an org, this is my organization. And I'm proud to be in it because I own it and I'm in it. So that's what it's all about.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's I think it's a wonderful focus, and you know, particularly when you look at the power of positive thinking, and that really gets to, you know, putting the positive piece in this, and really it becomes a yardstick, a metric for leaders to measure themselves.
Yeah, and we sometimes, you know, we focus in on, we've always, you know, we said this, I'm really trying to, we said we always we got 10% of the Army, and we focus about 90% of our Army on 10%. And I'm trying to flip that around, is that we focus in on that 90%, and then kind of we'll dwindle that down, because we're just making that 90 become 91, 92, 95%. So yeah, really focus in on the positive aspects.
Yeah, I think that's great. So now the Secretary of the Army and the Chief of Staff of the Army have established cross-functional teams. And, you know, one of those teams is solely focused on soldier lethality. Now, while this area is very broad, you are focused on the training, the discipline, and the physical fitness of the individual soldier. So how does your vision, and what's your thoughts about training fitness into soldier lethality?
Yeah, so I'm really proud to add fitness into, you know, of course, my favorite cross-functional thing is soldier lethality. And then to add fitness into this, how do we measure lethality? We so struggled with this for so long. I even asked at one time, I said, you know, we looked up and what does it mean to be a lethal squad? Nobody could say anything. It's like, are you qualified with your weapon? Yes. Okay. You qualify with your crew served weapons. If you're qualified in your assault, yes. Okay. But then what does it make to mean lethal squad? So if you add your qualifications, you add your fitness, maybe we look at how much you sleep. And then if we can measure that, then we can see if you're doing, again, looking at the positive aspects, I see what the great ones are doing. And then maybe I take the other ones that are in the bottom of that lethality and then say, okay, you need to work on this, and maybe some sleep, nutrition. And then, so that nutrition and fitness and how you do on your qualifications. If that person over here gets better, then it's going to make my squad more lethal. And they'll be a better team. So building a cohesive team, highly trained, disciplined, and fit, you know, kind of fits all in that package of soldier lethality. And we got to quantify that. So if we can quantify it, then we can, if we're lacking in an area, we can make it a little better.
Yeah, so the expert soldier badge is kind of part of that. You get into the lethality piece of it, you know, being an expert in your profession.
Yeah, like I said, I was really proud of the expert soldier badge. And some people say, well, why would we do this? Well, it's always great to be measured against the task of expert soldier badge. But I'm almost certain nobody's ever questioned, you know, hey, infantry guy, why would you do the EIB? It's like, of course we do the EIB. We're going to be expert infantry badge. So we just needed something for our soldiers, yeah, where we looked at those tasks where we could say, here's the task. These are warrior tasks and battle drills, skill level one tasks that every soldier needs to have. And I knew we had to do this for the Army when a soldier going through the test 2 years ago looked me in the eye and he said, Sergeant Major, I've been deployed. And if I would have done this before I got off the plane, before I deployed, I would have felt more comfortable about doing the mission than I was about to be given. Yep. And I was like, okay, that's it. We're winning. Whether he passes or not, we've got to do this for the Army. Yeah. Because they'll, you know, when you do that and you're going through load, fire, and clear of a 249, a 240, or a 50 cal, and then all of a sudden, that's not your job. You're the 42 Alpha, but you go through all those tasks. And then when you come off the plane, you're in combat, you can say, I've ran through those tasks. And I feel comfortable if I had to do it, if something bad happened, that might not be my primary job, but I know that I would be able to go over there and execute that task.
Yeah. And one of the things, too, I look forward to is we're going to do another podcast on the expert soldier badge. And I want to get more into detail, too, on some of the specifics of it. But now one of the other things, too, with soldier lethality is disciplines. And there was some discussion about 600-20 and how does that kind of now work into soldier lethality?
The discipline is, it's about getting reps and sets. We hear this all the time with the synthetic training environment. We want our NCOs to have reps and sets at whatever task that would be. If I'm 42, we'll go back to the, you know, I got a process of 41A7. If you've never done that, and then all of a sudden, you know, my pay is all messed up, or I need a new assignment, and I had the first time ever is fill out the 41A7, you're probably going to not do it well. Well, that's the same thing with discipline. We want our NCOs to take an action, but when do we give them the authority to take a visible action when they see something wrong? So we got to make sure our policy, meaning it's okay for the NCO to go up and say, stop, soldier, what are you doing? And they got to be comfortable with that. I think at some point we may have lost that familiarity with making a correction. And we got to make sure our policies match what we want them to do. Because when the big stuff comes, when I'm filling out the 4187 to get my pay right or something, you don't want to get that right. You don't want to no pay due. But it's the same thing. Just as something as simple as, you know, when you see a soldier doing something wrong and you want that NCO to stop a sexual harassment, a sexual assault, you want them to take some action. But they've never made a correction for in their life. But you expect them all to do it. But we haven't given them the tools to do that. So I'm trying to align the policy and then give the NCOs the authority to where they feel comfortable that we, at all levels, empower them to take some action and we're going to stand by them. And we give them little actions at that. And then when the big ones come, they'll be comfortable with it. But if we don't get them reps and sets at that, when the hard ones come, we're seeing that maybe we're not doing well at those either.
Sure. So what about nutrition and how that's linked to dining facilities and then the impact on body fat composition? I mean, how's that all now link into soldier lethality from your perspective?
Yeah. You know, we've had a lot of attention on the Army Combat Fitness Test. So the bold thing I'm looking at is, We can take all that and ruin it with, you know, a couple muffins. So
yeah, that's right.
So we really have to look at how we fuel our bodies. You know, I've been looking at defects for a long time. We've given them the money. Now we just need to we need a couple of things. We need to make sure that we have leaders in the defect. And maybe this is a little bit part of the time. It's very rare when I go to any installation, if I look around, not the people that are in the corner with me, you know, I look in the main floor, how many leaders are in there? And then why is that important for our nutrition? When a leader, you know, if you're a brigade sergeant major and you go into the DFAC and they don't have iceberg lettuce and spinach and mixed nuts and cut fruit, you're going to demand that the DFAC get right. But if you're the private and you go in and go, man, this salad bar's terrible. Let me grab a cheeseburger. Well, if the leaders are in there, I'm just going to expect that they inspect the defect and demand that the quality is nutritious and healthy. So we got to get leaders back into the defect. We're going to give you the money. We've given you the money. We increased the basic daily food allowance. So we did. We did that. But then when I go in the defect, I want to see healthy food choices that may not be as cheap as the other things. So it may cost a little more, but we gave you the money. So I want to see some improvement on those healthy choices.
Yeah.
And I ask them to, you know, get an app. Well, you have an app where you go in and, you know, and there's lots of food apps, but not just the red, amber, green on the food choices. But I go in, I did this great workout because I'm doing the new ACFT. I go and said, I'm going to have some baked chicken. I'm going to have some lettuce. I'm going to have ranch dressing and all that. And I put it in there and out pops as well. If you do that, you're going to gain 3 pounds. I don't know.
Right.
Hopefully you'll lose 2 pounds with that diet.
But you know, that's a great point. You know, as a master fitness trainer, you know, we ran the 10 miler. Okay. So you run the 10 miler in about an hour and a half. So you burn about 1,000 calories an hour running. So 1,500 calories running an Army 10 miler. And you can walk into a fast food restaurant and blow it all just with a supersized sandwich and meal that you buy, because you can put 1,500 calories back in your body just that quick.
Yeah. So if we get this right, as a matter of fact, this one thing I would always ask soldiers, and I guess we'll let the secret out of the bag and we'll give the answer, is I'd say, what's more important when you have someone on the Army body composition program? Do you do 2-day PT sessions or take them to breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Every unit I've seen says they do 2 PT sessions a day. Okay, so now I burn more calories. I know there's more to it than nutrition than just calories, but you know, with calorie in, calorie out. So what happens if I stop that second PT event? You know, I made the weight, I lost the weight, and now I stopped doing that second one. I didn't change my diet. You probably are going to gain the weight back.
Yes.
So right. I said, we have to learn how to do 1 PT event, fuel the body the appropriate way with the right diet, and then change how we do the diet, then we're going to lose the weight the right way. And then it will stay off because I'm not doing extra or PT, so I don't have to stop that. I just kind of change the diet.
Yeah.
So we got to really look at that. Nutrition is so valuable to the health of us. You know, long-term health is really important.
Yeah, and I think that's great. So, and, you know, while on the subject of PT, I mean, you recently posted your Army Combat Fitness Test score on social media, 552. And I'm a witness. I was there, watched the best warriors compete. You took the Army Combat Fitness Test with them. And I also made note that your travel coordinator scored 550. You know, there was a little bit of rivalry there between the two, but I thought that was really very cool. But, you know, the other thing, too, I thought that was unique was out of the 22 competitors, 11 NCOs, 11 soldiers, we had two 600s.
Yeah, I was overjoyed with that. I think we're going to have more. We're just, you know, we only had 60 battalions in the pilot. And that's why we need everybody to just go out and start taking it, you know, because we're going to have more 600s. We're going to have people score higher and higher on this because over time we're going to get a little better. I think I can actually, after I took that one, I said, I'm going to see if I can score a 600 in my. My NCO looked at me. He said, well, and I said, oh, by the way, you got to do that with me. He gave me a dirty look, but it's going to be great. Yeah. But I think, you know, can I do that? We'll see. It's going to be challenging. It's not going to be easy. But I was really proud of those two that got the 600, and all of them did exceptionally well. Yeah. So the best warriors were truly the best fit, and I'm really proud of that. But I can tell you, if we get out and we train the right way, and we look at what's already in the PRT manual, look at some of the YouTube videos that we have, go to the website, look at those exercises. They've been in there for a while. We just haven't been doing them. Yes. We really have to do that. And I think we're really going to see scores go up. You just got to get out and you just got to do it.
Yeah. We changed the manual, but we didn't change the test. So now this kind of puts the focus back, you know, where it is on, you know, reading the manual and studying doctrine. So in addition to soldier lethality, you're also very focused on people first and the top five quality of life areas. So let's talk about housing and barracks improvements for just a moment.
Yeah, well, we've had a lot of attention, in my opinion, on the family housing, and we're not giving up on that. We took our eye off the ball in some locations, and, you know, shame on us for doing that, all of us. And it's not just, you know, the people we hired to do the barracks, it's the leaders. We kind of should not have done that. So we are not taking our eye off the ball. We got it, and we're still making steady improvements. But my focus, you know, I lived in the barracks for 7 years. So I know how that can quickly, we can lose sight of that. And because at some point we had the First Sergeant's Barracks Initiative, now we've gone back to the Army Barracks Management Program. So, and another story is that I was somewhere recently, I'm not going to say where, and somebody said, well, you know, Sergeant Major, First Sergeant actually said, you know, Sergeant Major, you know, I was, since we weren't in charge of the barracks, and if you want to know something about me, I can be a little direct and sometimes a little worse than others. But this, I turned to him and said, you were always in charge of the barracks. So we've always been in charge of the barracks. But when the First Sergeant's Barracks Initiative came out, we had people to help us manage the barracks. But some people wash their hands of their obligation. So I'm everywhere I'm going, I'm telling everybody, I am going to walk in your barracks. If you don't put it on my agenda, it doesn't matter. I'm going to do it. So you got to be ready for it. And if I, you know, even if I give you the answers to the test, that doesn't mean it's going to make us better. But the ultimate goal is don't do it because the SMA is coming. Do it because it's what our soldiers deserve.
Yes.
They deserve a great place to live. I had a old barracks that I lived in, and that thing was spotless. We're not going to go back to the days where I had to have my door unlocked at 5 o'clock in the morning, and one day I didn't, and my squad leader was kicking down my door. Scared me to death. I didn't know what's going on. Earthquake. But we're not going to do that. But the barracks need to be clean, and they need to be healthy. And sometimes, imagine, you know, you lived in the barracks, and your roommate's, you know, a dirty person, and, you know, you don't want to get in a fight, but that's not your job. It's your team leader's job to go in there and say, you live like a pig, and the other guy or gal doesn't deserve that. Yep. And we're going to make it better. So I'm going to make it better. And I'm going to continuously go to barracks. I tell everybody, for 4 years, I'm going to walk through your barracks everywhere I'm at. No matter where I'm at, I'm just going to mosey that way, and I'm going to wander off, and I'm going to be in there, and I'm going to make sure. But that's not going to be the driving force. The driving force is we've asked a task force team to go look at the barracks and then see how we can fund it to renovate and update the barracks so we can get better. But it takes two. It's not just about the funding, because if we make it better and then we don't clean them and we punch holes in the walls on the weekends, we're going to be right back to where we were. So it's going to take a team.
So the key is really, I mean, for everybody listening in on this, it's all about non-commissioned officer leadership. And, you know, senior NCOs, they have a presence in the barracks. All those that are junior, they'll be in the youth services.
I would say the child development centers, I think we're going to make some really good grounds on this. And if you were in the family forum, I'm not sure if you said it yesterday, we're building 3 new child development centers. We got 6,000 on a wait list. And we were talking about the wait list. Is it really 6,000? Because some people go, oh, that's a lot. Is it sometimes that those soldiers on the wait list aren't actually 6,000. I have my child in healthcare and child care, but, you know, I want to be at this child development center. Maybe that's a little closer to my house. So the number probably is about 3,000. So we're going to build new child development centers. So that's one way. The Secretary of the Army is looking at new ways to try and see if we can do other venues. We've already had the fees, we supplement fees. If childcare is very expensive and you don't want to bring them all on post, you can get off post. And we have fees, supplemental fees that we give in the military to offset the cost. So we're looking hard at new ways. We're looking at home-based childcare, and we went from, I think, 131 homes to 180 homes, where that's even actually the best case scenario, is that you can drop it off with another soldier spouse and they're working, gets the income for that family, but it also helps solve our wait list on the child care.
Yeah, that's great. So in our last couple minutes, what I thought I'd like to do is just take a minute or two and just talk about your career and your family. And this for our listeners out there, I think that, you know, sometimes, you know, when they think of the SMA, they wonder, you know, what's the SMA's family like? And of course, I mean, you have a great family. And I thought if you would just kind of tell us a bit about your family.
Well, you know, I love my family, and a lot of, you know, you heard me even my first opening remarks. You know, people say, you know, Sergeant Major of the Army. Sometimes they say, well, what do we call you? Sergeant Major of the Army? Call you Sergeant Major? I said, I'll answer to those. I do. I mean, if you say Sergeant Major, I turn around. If you say SMA, then I clearly turn around. But, you know, I kind of look for both of those. But when I talk about my family, and I said this the other day, everybody has a whole bunch of identities. And those are two titles that I'm very proud of, Sergeant Major and Sergeant Major of the Army. I'm extremely proud to be a soldier. But it's still not my favorite title. My favorite title is still Alexander's husband and Sophia and Isabella's dad.
That's very cool.
So that's how, you know, I love my family. They're great kids. I still haven't figured out why my wife married me. So she is great. She's extremely smart and she's dedicated. And I wouldn't be where I'm at today without all of them helping me get to this point.
So and she's also a great supporter. And I know that you and Alexandria ran the 10 miler.
We did. And then she heckled me on my little video. So we did great. And that was the first time that we ran together. So usually she gets mad at me about mile one and says, just run. I'm tired of you making me run faster. And I said, this time I am not doing that. We're just going to run together. And we stayed at a nice pace. Our goal was 9-minute miles. And we ran a little under that. So an hour and 20 minutes. And I was really proud of her and I really enjoyed it. I had a great time. I was just first time I had my head up. I'm looking at the monuments. I look at the band and the sides, when you're racing it and, you know, and normally I was going for that 7-minute mile for 10 miles. It's head down.
Sergeant Major team.
It's head down, go, you know, throw some water in, you know, don't get dehydrated. Don't slow down. Run faster. You're not on a hill. You're going downhill. Yeah, everything is about the pace and get through it. So I had such a fabulous time with my wife. I'm really proud of her time. I'm proud of our time. And I'm proud that I got to run with her. And it's a respectable time. I thought, you know, hour 28, you know, for a 51-year-old. But I might race next year. So I'm hoping those that want to beat my time, it might go a little faster.
Yeah. Well,
okay. Well, that's maybe one or 2 minutes.
Hey, so one last question. Where do you call home?
I'm from Jasper, Alabama. I'm really proud of that. I grew up in Alabama, lived there most of my life, about three when I moved there. And then I didn't move out of my hometown, the same hometown. I was there until I joined the Army. I even went to the university. They had a local college, Walker College there too. So I went there for a year before I joined the Army. And I'm really proud of that. I went back and talked to my high school last year. I was extremely excited. I'm going to go talk again to a few high schools during Veterans Day. So, and I'm a big Alabama football type. Yeah, so if you don't like it, it's okay. Roll Tide. And that's, but it's a great place. My mom, my sister, my brother, cousins, nephews, they're all kind of still there. So
that's great. So SMA, thank you very much for, you know, being here with us today. And I think that this, for our listeners out there, gives everybody a little more insight into who is Sergeant Major of the Army Michael A. Grinston. And I just want to say thank you for being here with us today, and have a great Army day. So for all of our Army listeners out there, Army strong.
Army strong.